I've always had a little bit of a, I used to call it mentoring, and then I went to coaching
Right.
because people kept calling it coaching. And like now I'm calling it coaching. People are calling it mentoring. It's like, what, you know, but I always feel that people come to me because they're looking for advice, answers to issues in their business.
Yeah.
And it's really fine if I've got those answers and I can say to them, well, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. And when they go away and they take action and they come back and they say, oh yeah, I've done that, it's great, fantastic, that makes me feel great, because I was like, oh great, I feel like an expert now, I feel, you know, validated, I feel that people haven't wasted their money. What an awful thing that they come to me and then they don't put into action what I'm telling them, and then I feel responsible for wasting their money, even though it's like not my issue, is it? But and if, yeah, and I feel a bit of a fraud if that doesn't happen. And it was interesting how the sort of bad client, I was sort of trying to think about this, and there was, I remember there was this lady from Canada, which was immediately a little bit of a barrier, because like most of my clients are, well, they all are in the UK. And she had this very specific situation where she was like a language trainer, and she was operating in this very difficult market, which was, you know, she was in a French-speaking part of Canada, and it was all very complicated. And I genuinely felt that I didn't really know the answers, and I felt really bad. And also, she kept saying about the fact that she tried to solve this problem and she didn't have very much money. And oh, guilt, guilt, guilt was like kind of like, oh, you spent this money and I don't have the answers. I'm like, oh my God, I'm such a terrible person. And I felt totally incompetent, and I could feel every time we came to the session, I could feel that sense of panic welling up. Like, what am I going to say? That I don't really understand enough about this situation to kind of help her, and I kind of
So
did, but
as you're just reflecting on
yeah.
this now, Sharon, as you're reflecting on that relationship and this dynamic, right, of feeling overly responsible, right? A lot of guilt and a lot of like you've got to be the expert. Like what do you notice about that?
That if I don't feel that I do have the answers, then I feel like a fraud, and I it makes me feel really panicky, and I don't enjoy it, and I'm glad when it's over and I can don't have to deal with it anymore.
What is that like for your clients, do you think?
Oh, probably awful.
But because it sounds like you've got a dynamic at play here where your clients want you to have the answers, and so you play that game. Your clients are like, I don't quite know what to do here. I don't, you know, I'm learning how to run my business. And so you go and get entangled with that story and say, I'll come up with the answers for you then. Does that make sense? What might your healthy self offer you about a different way you could show up? What if you stopped playing the expert game?
And just let them find the answers for themselves.
Well, play that out. What would that look and feel like to you?
It feels a bit painful, you know, because sometimes they show up and they just tell me what to do. So you can't just sit there and go, oh no. I'm not going to tell you. No, I'm just going to, let's just waste an hour while you work it out for yourself. I can tell you know, what you want to know, you know,
So
it
notice you've gone from, okay, I'll either tell you all the answers or I'll tell you none of the answers, right? And so what might be the healthy middle ground? Like, and this is what we do, right? It's like supporting the client to come up with their own answers.
Yeah.
Right? Knowing that, you know, and sometimes that's about setting clear expectations up front. Right? So when a client has a call with you to say, I'm interested in working with you, and you say to them, what are the expectations you have of our work together? And they say, oh, I want you to tell me the answers. Or you ask them that question. Are you looking for someone to tell you the answers?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Then you get to say, that's not what coaching is.
Yeah.
Right. But it doesn't mean that you can't perform that service in your business. Right. And this is where our cognitive distortions kind of get in the way, right? It's like it's all or nothing, you know, and then we kind of panic in letting go of the ways that we're protecting ourselves. So one thing you could think about is, oh, I have some people who want answers to specific questions. That feels like either a standalone product or course or something I can teach in a different way. Mm. Whereas the coaching work is very much about us being in the uncertainty together and me supporting you to figure out the answers. See how it gets a bit more complex there, right? But it means that your role is clearer. Mm. What would that feel like to you?
Well, it feels lighter because it doesn't feel as though I'm so ultra responsible for everything that's going on in their business, you know?
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and I guess this is the thing I think, and we talked about this in this morning's call as well, is in order for us to kind of get into that rescue entanglement dynamic, which you're beautifully describing, I think that is, and certainly, you know, Scott and I have found this to be true, this is the most common dynamic for us as coaches. Mm. And the reason for this, I think, is that it is the shadow of empathy, right? And for us to choose this career, we have more empathy than the average bear, usually, right? We care about other people. We want to support them to, you know, reach their potential in whatever way, right? Otherwise, we'd be, you know, making widgets in a factory. Or cakes in a shop, right? We do something different. But we are, because of our levels of empathy, because this work feels like that kind of calling, we care about our clients. And so it's very easy to let go of any boundaries around that empathy and for it to tip over into rescuing. But like you said, it becomes kind of a bit icky for the client as well, because then they're not sure about what their role is. If you're responsible for their business, what do they do? Mm-hmm. Or if you're responsible for the success of their business, what do they do?
I do notice that when we're coming up to the end of the time, because it's like a 3-month thing, I had somebody yesterday and they actually say, oh, I'm just so conscious, right, I've got a list of questions because I'm just so conscious that I'm going to be on my own after today.
Yeah.
So I'm going to scoop everything up and just make sure I soak every last.
Yeah, it's too late.
Oh, too late.
and this is the thing, right? I drew this this diagram this morning. I don't know if you can see that, right? This pyramid. Down here, you've got the coachee, right? And here you've got the coach. And here you've got the future self of the client. That's what that FS stands for. The coach is interested in the future self of the client and the client as they are now. And the client is interested in their future self. But we're all in that dynamic together. Right? So we have to lead this. We are looking after the client as they are now and who they are becoming. They're just interested in who they are becoming. And what our world tells people is find someone to give you the answers. But as coaches, we help the client figure out the answers because no one has run their business in the way they're going to run it. We don't have the answers for them, right? All of most of the issues that they are coming up with will be protective beliefs, not business problems, right? If there were business problems, they could Google it. Or you can say to them, you could probably Google that, right? So I think there's something in here about getting really clear on what your role actually is that will really support you. And being willing to kind of experiment with that. How does that land for you, Sharon?
Yeah, that feels a lot more comfortable.
Yeah. And I think it's the practice of it, right? Because we are we do this work on our own, and we're not. There's no requirement for supervision. There's no requirement for someone to say, "Hey, when we do this, when we go into these dynamics, and there's no boundaries." And we're over caretaking of the client, what's their role? Right? And it's just this really great way of coming back to, oh, I notice I'm caretaking. So just something I would invite you to do, Sharon, is to spend a little bit of time reflecting on what it feels like in your body when you go into that over caretaking mode. Right, like just you could bring to mind some of the experiences that you've had, but just notice the body sensations that come up. Notice, you know, does your heart start to race? Do you get clammy hands? Do you feel a bowling ball in your belly? Just notice all of it. Remember these things and bring them back. Because then what you've got is a barometer to know, oh, this is that feeling. This is that feeling. I'm over caretaking. And it's going to serve you as a way to just know when you're going into that place. Yeah. And we can work more on this as we move through around how that specifically shows up for you. But what you're describing is exactly what happens when we aren't clear about where we end and the client begins. It's inevitable,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So maybe just sit with that, reflect on it, let it be a bit uncomfortable, and we can pick that up.
Yeah, thank you.
Beautiful share. Thank you, Sharon. I just want to, okay, Lorraine, do you think be concentrating on a niche we are setting ourselves to care even more than if we don't have a niche? This is fascinating. Lorraine, can you talk more about that? What do you mean?
Well, I was just thinking, so for example, I've been doing financial coaching.
Yeah.
And I just wondered, by choosing that niche, because it's either because of what you're interested in or you know a lot about or you're experienced, are you setting yourself up to become more entangled because it's quite close to home? Because I've noticed that I have a different expectation what somebody would get from a financial coaching session than from what they would get when I was doing my other training, but it was just general life coaching. It felt less of a responsibility or a burden when it was just life coaching, because it could be more about the client and coaching. But when there's a financial bit, I feel as if they have to have something to take away. So I have that different expectation, and so I just wonder, does that make it easier to be entangled?
So what I notice about what you're offering here is that you've created a belief around what your client's expectations are.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think you're entangled, but I don't think that's anything to do with entanglement. Yeah. Right? So I don't think it matters. Personally, I don't think it matters what kind of coaching we choose. Okay. I don't think there is a right niche or flavor of coaching to choose. And usually what can happen when it feels uncomfortable in a particular niche, it's because we're entangled. What I see a lot of coaches do is go, I need to change my niche. This is too freaking hard. When actually, if you changed the beliefs that you're taking into that entangled dynamic, you would thrive, whatever niche you had.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Can you say that last bit for me again, Sass?
So it doesn't matter what niche you have, if you work on the beliefs that you are taking into your coaching niche and untangle from those, you will thrive.
Okay.
So what I would invite you to do is to spend, maybe you may even want to put a timer on this, Lorraine, and do a bit of a thought download on everything you believe about being a financial coach.
Okay.
Let it be as irrational and judgy and weird and wonderful as you like, right? Because what that's going to give you is some themes to play with around the kinds of entanglements that you might be taking into your client work.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Perfect to bring to a study group with Scott, perfect to bring to your practice pods. Really juicy stuff to work on. If you chose to work with a supervisor, they're going to love you for bringing this kind of raw data to play with, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's what we're trying to do in this session is just start to ear that out. Oh, makes total sense. You know, Sharon loves her clients so much, she's over caretaking for them, right? And you're doing this thing where you've got all these expectations that you've built up and you're wanting to meet those, but they have been made up by you, so you could change them, right? Mm-hmm. But they're serving a purpose right now. Those expectations and those beliefs are serving a great purpose. They'll probably feel quite safe, right? If I give the client a concrete, tangible outcome, then I can say, this is what you got out of the coaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Yeah. Barrett, what's going on? Put your hand up.
Hi.
Hi.
That was interesting. Just a disclaimer. I feel like I'm taking up too much space for bringing up the stuff that came up for me. But here we go.
Well, everyone's taking up space. That's the point. Yeah.
I guess, huh? Okay, so it was interesting for me to see, and maybe that's similar to what Sharon just talked about in some way, that when I think about the clients that I enjoy like working with, or that was easier to work with, with whom it was easier to work with, I think I sometimes come to a point where I'm like, I don't want to like presume anything. I'm not sure if the hunches I have, if I should like follow or trust my intuition, or if I'm being, I don't know, maybe even condescending, because I assume that I see the bigger picture that maybe they don't see at that point. So, just finding a balance in that is something that came up for me. And then,
so tell me about that. Tell me about what happens when you think about testing your assumptions with clients, or playing out your hunches with clients. What comes up when you think about doing that?
Well, I'm blank. Hold on. Can you rephrase? Maybe that'll be easier for me.
Well, so what I heard you say is, that you're not sure about testing your assumptions about the bigger picture that you're seeing with clients. So I'm hearing you say that you hold back from doing that because you don't want to seem condescending. Did I hear that right?
I do sometimes, but I don't know how I feel about it when I do. And then sometimes, I think I hold back and, because I don't want to be condescending.
Right.
You got it right.
Yeah. Okay. So, so what happens when you think about just testing your hunches? Because that's what I just did when I said, I think I heard you say this. Yeah. Did I get that right? That was me testing the hunch. That's what we do, right? So I wonder, like, what does that feel like for you just to do that? Why does that feel risky?
It makes me feel arrogant. I don't want to be arrogant.
But in what way? Say more about that.
I kind of feel like I'm putting myself above them or something, because I feel like I'm, yeah, as I said, like, I feel like I see something that they might not be aware of at that point. But then I guess what is happening is that I'm looking at it from the outside. It doesn't mean that I'm always right, but I'm looking at it from a different angle. So that gives a different perspective.
Has anyone ever given you a different perspective that you were like, oh, I just couldn't see that? That's so helpful to me.
Oy, oy, oy. yeah, I guess so. I'm not always very... I don't always take that too well, I guess.
What do you believe about the person who's offering that to you?
Depends on the person, really. But yeah, like, I would say that within my family, I don't, like, my first reaction is defensiveness.
Right.
And then, yeah, I get defensive quite fast.
So is it possible that you're assuming that's how your clients might be receiving?
Maybe.
Yeah. That makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Makes sense. When someone does that to me, I feel defensive. I don't want the client to feel defensive.
Yeah.
So what could you believe? What do you believe about someone offering a new perspective that's healthy? Like, how could you think about that in a really healthy way?
Well, again, like, there's been other people that whose opinion I do value, and I haven't really felt the need to get defensive, or it just wasn't my reaction to what they were saying.
Right.
But it feels like, interesting, yeah. I'm just thinking of that one particular friend of mine, and I just feel like we're equals. Like, we're both very much on the same level.
Yeah.
And I feel I can be as open with her as she can be with me. So it goes both ways, and that makes it okay.
Right. So you've got this dynamic in your family, it sounds like, where someone will offer maybe advice or another perspective or tell you something that you haven't seen, and that creates some defensiveness.
Yeah.
Families are great for that, right? Yeah. And in this other dynamic, which feels much more even, there's more respect, there's more care, there's more of an equity, that feels really safe, right?
Yeah.
And then you have this other dynamic, which is your coaching clients.
Yeah.
Right? And so you get to approach that from the place, remember the triangle, right, where you're caring about the client, you're caring about their future self, and the hunch you're offering is in service to them.
Yeah.
Right? And you kind of offer it and you detach, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't even say that, because maybe sometimes it's completely off. I don't
really
think that it affects me that much. Like, in that way, I think I am able to detach myself from whether it's true what I'm saying or not, or spot on or whatever.
Well, and that's the healthy approach to take, right? We're coaches, we're humans with coaching skills and experience. We're not mind readers.
No.
We don't know as, you know, the only person that knows about the client's experience is the client.
Yeah.
And all we're doing is offering them new ways to look at things, new ways to experience the world that is in service of who they are becoming.
Yeah. It's interesting that you just said mind reader, because lately, like in my relationship with my husband, I've been saying frequently that I'm not mind reading anymore. If I'm not going to assume, if he gives me an answer, he says he's fine or whatever, I'm not going to question that. I'm just going to go with, okay, he's fine. If he's not fine, then he needs to tell me that. But that I'm kind of done with mind reading, because it also takes a lot of energy, right? Like, yeah, just.
And notice, right? Like, as you practice that within your relationship, that becomes a much more respectful way of showing up, right?
Yeah.
Because even if someone isn't fine, if they say they're fine, it's also them saying, and I don't want to talk about it. So it's like, okay, I trust you.
Yeah.
And notice that the dynamic within the coaching relationship is very different from a partnership in your private life, from your family dynamic, right? Like, that is the thing to get your head around, is that in the coaching relationship, we show up leading the process, right? We still have that equity relationship where we don't try and replace our own judgment with from the clients, right? We're very much like, you're in charge, you run things here, but you are here because you want this support. So I'm going to hold that space for you and allow that to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of that job involves getting really clear on what your role is.
Yeah, I've been working on that. That's actually a really good point.
Yeah. It's a great example of how that stuff how our humanness, right, just kind of filters into coaching relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great share.
Thanks.
Thanks, Vera. Really cool. Really cool. Anyone else want to share? Joe, Norvi, Lisa, what's going on for you guys? What are you noticing?
I'm noticing some parallels with what's already been talked about.
Yeah.
But it's helping me see. I really like the triangle little diagram that you held up before, because what's happening to me with the clients that I've really liked is, you know, it's a relationship based on mutual respect, which is great. But where it gets tricky is that I'm really excited about their goal for them.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited about the progress they're making towards their goal.
Yeah.
And I feel like that has the potential for me to move from unconditional positive regard into conditional positive regard. Like, the regard is there if you keep on making this great progress towards this really exciting goal. And it's not like that, but that's how it plays out in my head. And the other aspect of the relationship dynamic, which I can see, is I find them interesting and they're interested in me. And that, again, invites them to look towards me rather than keep their eye on their goal. Which I don't think there's two real clear clients that I've got this in mind with, and I don't think we have come unstuck, but it's very much the potential is there.
Yeah.
That, I think it's just stayed on the right side of healthy, in the sense that they will say, you know, oh, you know what it's like, and you've had experiences like this and that type of thing, which invites me to start colluding with them.
Right. Yeah.
But I think I've got just enough healthy adult self showing up to say, I could share some of that stuff and I could draw on that, but is that really what you need in this moment?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm the analogy that I have learned through my coach training is around not getting in the client's box. But actually, I think the triangle is kind of just as helpful, and in some respects more.
Everyone stays in their corner. Yeah.
And so, interestingly, when I look at the clients that I haven't got on with so well, difficult clients as you describe them, it's kind of for the same reasons, but because I've slipped beyond that healthy adult self into entanglement, and that's where it's kind of come unstuck and started me making meaning about myself and my coaching, rather than drawing on all the other things that it could mean as well.
And I guess I think the reason to look at this, in some ways I think it can be a bit trickier with the clients you really care about or really have a rapport with, is often that tips into some kind of dynamic that, as you say, it gets into the danger is that we collude because we start to get attached. And it sounds like you've got enough awareness of when that might be happening to kind of, stay in your corner, if you like, to use that analogy. I'm curious to know a bit more about the conditional nature of goals. What happens for you there?
I think it's when I share their excitement and when I share. So some of the reasons that I've enjoyed working with them include, like, they're exploring themselves and their relationship with success and ambition. And that causes me to explore my own, or prompts me to explore again my own relationship with success and ambition. And I think it's this making progress towards the goal bit. I think it's when I step into, let me try and get this right. It's when I start to think that the only measure of the effectiveness of my coaching is the number of steps towards their goal they've taken, rather than the learning or unlearning about other aspects of themselves, which could be for them just as valuable. And I'm keeping too tight a hold on the goal for them. You know, they may have relaxed that hold a little bit, that grip, and it's me going, but that goal was amazing, keep going. You know, it's like, actually, no, I'm not onto that goal anymore, I'm onto something else. It's a belief rather than a business problem or a career problem in this case, because these are career coaches. And then it brings me back to the grid that you shared last week about the different relationships with goals, and am I trying to encourage them to have the same relationship with goals as I have, rather than letting them be free with their relationship with goals, albeit a different one.
I think this is where it gets tricky, is what if they fail on a goal and you're really attached to it and they know you are. What does that do to the coaching dynamic?
And I know what it has the potential to do, because I can sense that sometimes when they'll come into these are coaching relationships that have come to an end now, but at the time when they would come into the conversation, where they would almost expect me to feel disappointed if they'd not followed through on the actions that they'd said, when maybe they'd realize that they weren't the right actions or there was something else at play. But this is where I say about this conditional positive regard, is that suddenly it's conditional on their progress and them not disappointing me as their coach, when of course it doesn't matter.
Exactly, because in 2 months time you won't even remember the goal. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe that's the problem. Maybe I do. I remember the goal too much.
Yeah. Well, and I guess this is the thing, is when we are, well, and we'll talk about this when we talk about goals in module 10, but one of the things to really think about is what meaning does the goal have for the client, right? It could be super practical, be I just need a job, right? If you're career coaching, I need to change jobs or whatever. But it's that, I think what can happen is we create a dynamic that colludes with their fears about not meeting that goal. Because we don't really know what their history is with failure, what their relationship is with failure, what their family taught them about failure, right? And so if we start to get attached to the goal, that can bring all that stuff up in a way that it doesn't feel safe for them to really explore this. Because failure, I think when a client brings a big fail to a coaching session, that has been some of the most tender and, you know, full of learning sessions when that can be held. And it's like we can explore what you're making that mean or not. Because the truth is that the goal is nothing. Who gives a toss, right? It doesn't actually matter. It's who we become on the way to the goal, right? It's the client's future self on the way to the goal. And just being able to hold that quite lightly, it also means that when they change the goal, you can get into, why are we changing that? Are we changing that because you're afraid you can't achieve the goal? Or are you changing that because for very good reasons you've realized it was never the goal you wanted in the first place, right? But we're neutral on the goal. The goal actually isn't that important. It's what the client is making it mean that really matters. And as soon as we get entangled in the goals, we can't really hold that detachment. Does that make sense?
It does, absolutely. That's really helpful. Thanks, Tess.
Yeah. And I guess the thing about all of this, and I love what you're saying about the clients that you've really loved working with. And to be honest, I didn't really come across this until I started. Does that mean you can't market your coaching with a goal? No, we can talk about that in a second, Norby. But what I have found is that it's often the clients that we imagine are our dream clients, and then we're in that dynamic with them, and we find actually we're very attached to their outcomes, to their goals, to their well-being, to everything that they gain or develop as part of the coaching. It's almost like we need to recalibrate quite quickly from that, to recognize it, get out of that place of entanglement, and really just recognizing it will start that process. It allows you to just free up that space so the client can just show up as who they are. Yeah. Norvi, I'd love to chat more to you about this if you're up for it.
Yeah.
Can you speak more about your question? I think I know what you mean, but please clarify.
Yeah, so obviously you're saying that we're not really attached to the goal, we're attached to like who they become. But also I find that like in the like mark, because obviously you're doing the coaching, but you also have to market your coaching. Sure. And definitely people seem more interested when there is a goal. And I've definitely noticed that like when, I mean, it does annoy me a bit, some of the kind of goals and help, but when people put a goal up, like say certain coaches will be like, oh, you'll hit 5K months or 10K months or XYZ. And so I feel like in a way that makes the marketing easier because people know exactly what they're coming for. And so then if we're not really interested in the goal and not attached to it,
yeah,
what happens if the client doesn't reach that, or do you just never market with it?
Great question. So what I would offer is any coach who's saying you're going to hit 5K months by working with me probably isn't meeting those goals anyway. It's a kind of a honey trap, right, to get the clients through the door. So because we can't guarantee that, because what if the client goes, okay, cool, I'm just going to show up for coaching and do nothing. Then, or I find I'm going to hit myself down as soon as I start doing the things that you've told me to do, right? So I think this is about having a balance. And what I would say is if goals are important to our clients and to the client group you want to work with, then of course we're all in, right? Because we're right there beside them. The difference is we're detached from the outcome. What we're invested in is who they become on the way to the goal, right? So it's just about, I think, having that clarity for yourself. If your client fails, you know, 14 times on the way to the win, and they learn so much about who they are as a business owner, as a leader, because ask anyone who's done this and is successful, they had a lot of fail on the way, right? We want to hold space for all of that. So I would offer that you can market this in a way that is quite rich, as opposed to the coaches that are saying, you're going to hit 5K months when you start working with me. You can say, whatever your income goal is important to you, I'm going to be with you every step of the way. And if you fail on that, if your self-doubt comes up, you know, hello, just me, you're like, you're in there going, you are safe to show up as you with all of your humanness, and I'm still in it with you. There is nothing you can do that will mean this, that I'm not invested in your success. It just means we're detached from the outcome. Right? You can still, I mean, I absolutely adore my clients, but I would never say that publicly, because I don't want anyone to think, and you have to live up to that adoration, right? It's like, I'm just in this, I'm going to love you whether you like it or not, right? And that is the energy, I think, that makes it safe for our clients to show up and be themselves. Yeah, does that kind of make sense?
No, it does. And I think that's a really good point about the adoration as well. So I see that, and I've seen stuff about being influential, but actually sometimes it seems to cross over into being like a guru, and like people think you're perfect, and that can also have issues.
Huge issues, yeah. I always get a little spidey sense of kind of worry when I see coaches, you know, really, they don't seem to be that interested in their clients' growth and development. It's more about cultivating followers. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like no, it really does. Like, I literally bought a course on like being an influential coach, and I'm like, no, I'm just going to do what I want to do. Oh, awesome. Yeah. But yeah, there's definitely a sense of that sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great question, and I think it's just that distinction between, you know, whatever happens on the way to your goal, I'm with you, and if goals are super important to you, I'm with you, and if you're a bit iffy about even having goals, I'm still with you. Right. And that makes it safe for all kinds of clients to come play with you. Yeah, really cool. Really cool. Anyone else want to share anything that's coming up? Any questions that you have, things you're noticing about this entanglement biz? So what I would highly recommend is that you do the SOAP, self-reflection tool. This is the subjective, you know, what your experience was, objective, what actually factually happened, some analysis and some planning for what you could do differently. Start filling those in after every client session. It's going to give you a ton of juicy info to work with. The only rule is be honest with yourself, right? If you choose to work with a supervisor, which I think if you are mostly working one-to-one and you start getting quite full, or in terms of like filling up your practice, or you're finding that you are feeling that sense of entanglement quite a lot, working with a supervisor is, I think, an amazing investment. They're often charged out at kind of therapist type rates, so it's not the same kind of market as coaching, so it can be quite an affordable way to support yourself. I would offer that apart from my degree, working with a supervisor, which I've been in supervision for over 8 years. At the moment, it's kind of bi-monthly, but it used to be quite often. That has single-handedly shifted my practice, just in terms of my ability to have that healthy self approach to working with clients. So if you're feeling that disquiet around entanglement, definitely, definitely start looking at supervision. You can Google that, Sharon. I love that happened. You can Google that. Where do I find a coaching supervisor? All these things will pop up, right? Amazing. Yeah. But the Association for Supervisors is a good spot. I'm also training as a supervisor. I'm starting a diploma in supervision later this year, and that will be another thing that we offer coaches as we move through SBCA. Once you graduate, there are also monthly supervision and support calls. So you will have access to that service, although it is in a group environment. Yeah, and that's just included as part of your tuition. because I think it's super important. So yeah, I think using the SOAP tool will really help you to reflect, look at working with a supervisor if that feels important to you. Start becoming aware of when you're getting entangled and be willing to do the vulnerable work of looking at that. You may want to do that in your practice pod. You may want to do it in your study group with Scott. Bring it to supervision once we graduate. You can always get in touch with me if you're feeling a bit wobbly. We can figure it out. Okay. Next week, we start module 8, which is all about conflict. Super fun. And that's quite a nice chunky module. Lots of tools in there. So we're going to just spend our call times together just exploring both your relationship with conflict and that of your clients and how to best support them. Okay, so that gets released on Thursday. I think it's super fun. Scott, I know, loves coaching on conflict, so he's going to be right up for it. Yeah, very fun. Cool. Well, I hope this has been helpful just to start looking at this. I really want us to normalize that, you know, we feel resentful and bored and irritated and a bit intimidated sometimes and a bit, you know, kind of caught up with our clients. That's entirely natural and normal. Nothing's gone wrong. It's all about how we choose to respond, right? It's all about kind of doing our own work around this. It really, really helps our clients and it helps us. So thank you so much for your presence today. I hope that's been super helpful. And I'll see you all on the discussion forum or next week, okay? All right, everybody, take care, stay hydrated. Bye, everyone.